When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Let's go!
Bingetown, how are we feeling today? It's your boy Dave here, and I am joined by fellow Bingetown co-host Luke, and it is our absolute pleasure today to be discussing Amazon Prime's hit animated superhero show, Invincible. I want to first start by saying, if it wasn't obvious by the title of this podcast, we are going to be covering this show in groups of two episodes. We're a little late on this recording, but according to us, it's right on schedule, but just to let everyone know, our next recording will drop when episode 4 airs. So we have episodes 1 and 2 today, 3 and 4 when episode 4 airs. Just wanted to put that out there just so everyone is aware. Also, getting into our Invincible background, Luke and I are strictly show watchers, so we have no source material. Everything that we discuss will solely be based on our show knowledge. I, for one, was a huge Invincible fan when season 1 dropped. I thought Omni-Man, Invincible himself, they were all fantastic characters. It was just a great spinoff to this, the generic like superhero show that we're used to seeing with Marvel. So I absolutely loved where season 1 left us. Was so excited to get into season 2. To me, this and The Boys, which coincidentally is also on Amazon Prime, maybe not coincidentally, it's just the best, but these are by far away the best superhero shows to me out there right now. It's not even close, and I am so excited to now be bringing this to the pod. Season 1, we were in discussions of bringing it to the podcast. We weren't entirely too sure, but now that it has solidified itself as one of the goated animated shows that is out there right now, we had to cover it for season 2. But in regards to these two episodes specifically, Episode 1 was exactly what I needed to get me personally back into the Invincible hype. Great intro to some new characters that we're seeing, a great new plot that's being introduced. I was a little bit worried with the exclusion of Omni-Man and where this was going to be going in season 2, because in season 1, he was such a critical part of season 1. I was not sure how they were going to get to season 2. But from what I saw, episodes 1 and 2, I got super hyped. Episode 1, definitely a little bit more so than 2. I think 2 was more of like a plot setter and tone setter for the overall season, but episode 1 was fantastic. I'll stop talking and let Luke get his quick thoughts on the first two episodes as well.
Yeah, so you covered pretty much everything I wanted to hit. We don't do a lot of two-person podcasts like this, and it's mostly because there's so many of us, there's so many different shows we cover, but you can tell this is a little bit of a passion project for me and Dave, so it's going to probably be a little bit quicker and less analytical than our normal podcast coverage. It's more for fun, just We love this show so much. We've both seen season 1 multiple times. I think I rewatched it like a week ago just to prepare for season 2. And it is just as damn good as I remember. It's just the writing is so freaking there. Like, I know it has source material to pull from, so that's a huge part of it. But like, my God, the cast, the voice cast might be the best of any show ever made. Like, you should look it up if you don't know already. But there is some star power behind these voices that were now growing to really love. And just like you said, Omni-Man, like, he is basically as captivating as Homelander is in The Boys, and that's one of my favorite characters of all time on TV, movies, video games, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. Like, the amazing voice cast, the great bad guy villain lead, all mixed together with like how the modernized take of shows with like dark plot lines, like they're not afraid to kill people, which is always going to be something that I love. Like, all of that combined with their satisfying plot twists that some may seem a little bit more predictable, some are coming out of left field, it just combines to be one of my favorite animated shows of all time. And then so we're going to be breaking this down kind of just a little bit more of a wing it mood than we usually have on this podcast, but we'll get you there and we'll bring up all the quotes and all the cool spots. We're just not going to be as in tune with like predictions, because like Dave said, we don't have any source material exposure. So this is going to just consider it like a rook's watch, right? Like a rookie watch going
face
through
value.
Exactly. We're just kind of taking it as we get it. So all that being said, I do want to just say we're going to start walking through episode 1 if you're ready.
I'm so ready, because this intro scene was wild.
How we're going to do this, I'll probably just queue up a few couple groupings of scenes. We'll talk about it, whatever we want. And then predictions, things we like, quotes, whatever, you know, normal stuff. So we'll see where that conversations lead us. But yeah, so episode 1, titled A Lesson for Your Next Life. And damn, right? Like, we just start off and I'm just jumping ahead right away saying like an alternate timeline. Mm-hmm. The Viltrum Empire basically already took over Earth in this timeline. They're killing everybody. I think Rex Splode is already implied to be dead, like right off the bat. Mm-hmm. There's like this resistance group led by Eve and is it just then the there's the real robots, real body still there. Like, there's so much going on of all of our people that we met from season one that were just like,
and the new character Angstrom.
Yes, exactly. Okay. And then obviously the key component of this episode and this build-up is this new guy Angstrom, who has just one of the most OP abilities ever, just basically multiversal jumping, and that just times so fucking well with everything that's going on right now. Marvel, like the Marvel TV shows, the Marvel movies, all of it. Like, this is just like what it is now, is multiverse.
This is going to hurt Marvel so much, because I am already way more invested into Angstrom than I ever probably will be with Kang. And it's such a shame, because I feel like that's obviously kind of, to me, it feels like this character is completely based off of Kang, the ability. I mean, obviously Kang is a normal human who powers the ability to time travel and like dimension jump, essentially. But this guy is actually born with that ability, which, like you said, just completely broken that he's able to travel dimensions. And was it 100% confirmed that he cannot travel within his own? Like, he can't just like portal in his world. He has to like portal somewhere to a different dimension and then portal back to that one, right?
That's a good question.
Because the Maulers were like, oh, like we noticed like you can only.
Yeah, you're right. They did that because like walking.
So there's a slight limit, but who cares? Like, if you're just able to portal to another dimension and then just portal back to the one that you're at, it doesn't really. It's just an extra step, but
right. He's just the biggest catalyst of this whole plot line. He's going to be the backbone of season two, I'm assuming, because of the end of season one and he becomes a villain and hates Invincible. I'm assuming he's going to be a finale of season two kind of death thing here. Mm-hmm. And then maybe even mid season and build up to Omni-Man coming back with the actual Viltrumites. But regardless, this is just, it gripped me like right away. Like, I love this sort of stuff. Like, this alternate version of Eve is like a badass. She's like cut off. She's got no hair. Like, she looks scarred. Like, these guys have seen it. And what really threw me off was seeing Robot's real body again, or Rudy's real. I don't know if we call him. What do we call him? Rudy Robot.
We can call him Rudy now since he's a human, I guess. That is just something that was like kind of just like slipped my mind very casually from season one. You probably remembered it a little bit more because you just rewatched it. But that for me took a second for me to click on that one.
So, some things to just point out here while we're like just jump starting this episode one. Like, Dave, you haven't watched that mid season two or the in between season one and two special with Adam Eve. So, first of all, if you haven't, I didn't even know about it, but go out there and watch it. Amazon put it out there. It's just like a prequel backstory of Adam Eve.
I got the first 10 minutes and I was actually watching that Killing Time before we started. And so I got the backstory of like, she's adopted essentially, or like she's not, her parents aren't her real parents is what I gathered.
The reason I bring it up is because that little side project that they did in between seasons did so much for Eve as like a character for me. Like, first they flesh out her powers so much more, explain how important she is. She's basically Scarlet Witch, but on steroids, like even better. Mm. And that's just one of the best things about this show is they're so shamelessly like just stealing from Marvel and DC by design. Like, that's the point of it. And then you even brought up Kang already, which I have comments. Like, basically the Council of Kangs is a thing like later.
Yeah,
like
when they show him in the room. Yeah, that was exactly where I was
just
thinking.
It's so funny because it's like both satirical, but then also the writing is so clean and good that it works. And then we'll obviously talk about Night City being Gotham in for our episode two stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, this was just such a great opening. You see like Mark and Omni-Man are just the worst. Like, this is how we find out later, like this is how the majority of timelines go, which makes our timeline even more interesting. But this is all set up just to have Angstrom leave this universe in search of basically trying to save the multiverse, kind of like Kang did originally.
Yeah. My thoughts going into it, when we first open up with like Immortal and Invincible fighting, immediately I'm kind of just like, okay, like, you know, training session, you know, they're talking a little bit of shit back and forth, you know. Immortal obviously hates Omni-Man, and I can see why he would hate Invincible himself too, just being the son of Omni-Man, maybe questioning him. So I just thought we were opening up with a training session, but you're watching them fight a little bit. Mm-hmm. You can tell they're serious as hell, and then Omni-Man shows up and I'm sitting here like, what the fuck? But if you saw the trailer, you kind of knew that the route where we're headed is the multiverse a little bit here. And so it clicked for me that, okay, this is definitely a different dimension. And like you said, I thought it was an interesting take that the one that we are familiar with, the universe that we are familiar with, that was an anomaly, essentially, in that Mark most of the time teamed up with Omni-Man after getting the shit kicked out of him. I think it probably Omni-Man's speeches probably just reached him. Just Mark probably realized how strong he was and just how pitiful humans are, and just kind of decided to join up and maybe saw the overall goal of this will be good for us, even though we're slaughtering thousands of you for the time being. But what an intro, man.
They are just so, what's the word I'm looking for? Terrifying when they have just no emotions and they're just like casually, like having Mark on Omni-Man's side is horrifying because they are just like, they are just casually talking about like, what are we doing for dinner basically while they're just mass murdering everybody. And the reason that's not like that in our universe is because they're not on the same side. Like Omni-Man can't just casually kill Mark. He's a Viltrumite. So, I mean, he probably could, but you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it's just crazy realizing that what sort of force they would be together. Mm-hmm. And like, they literally straight up say to everybody, once they break into the rebel hideout, they say, since you're all part of the resistance, we need to kill you all. Anyway. Yeah. Even though they like kind of like roll over.
The TV screen was playing in the background over and over. It's like, I know you guys think we're assholes for taking over your planet. So we've already been implied that there's nothing left for this planet. Essentially, it seems like the takeover has happened. This was probably the finishing blow to it. But what the touch that I really love on this is that Mark was like still himself, you know, like he was like cracking jokes. Right. Like he had like that human in him still a little bit, but at the same time, the Viltrum side of him just completely took over and he wasn't afraid. Mm-hmm. Oh my God. When he snaps Eve's neck and he's just like, oh, I didn't kill her. I just paralyzed her from the neck down. It's just like, this guy is fucked up in the head.
I wrote that down because that was just brutal. Like, and that's what the show does so good. When it wants to be brutal, it leans all the way in. And yeah, like that's what he does. He just snaps her neck.
She will never be able to use her powers ever again, which is exactly what Mark wanted. He's like, and again, going into what I was just talking about, is that like he makes the comment of, you know, I can visit her in the hospital, like not realizing that this woman still hates his guts probably. Yeah. So phenomenal intro. Nothing less from Invincible season two opening, you know.
And the good thing, which this is a total prediction by me, I don't really know. It does seem like this multiverse plotline is going to be self-contained. It's not going to be like Marvel, I don't think, where like it opens the floodgates where this is a thing forever now. Every movie going forward in Marvel, they're probably going to be they can pull whoever they want. They want Robert Downey Jr. back, they can do that. I don't think that's going to be the case. I think once we deal with Angstrom as a villain, I think it's going to be like a self-contained thing, which makes the writing a little bit cleaner in the long term. And I hope that they keep that way because I don't want to really follow Marvel that much to a T.
Yeah.
But this is like a good start. So that's all the stuff we get from the opening, just of the different timeline. There is going to be a split. Like how I have the rest of this episode kind of written down is just like the twins and Angstrom and all their stuff are going to be by themselves. And then pretty much everything else, because they're not really connected too much until the end, which we'll combine there. So let's jump into the real Mark that we got to know. Shout out to Glenn from The Walking Dead. So I like this because we find out pretty quickly it's been a month since Omni-Man's left. He's been gone from Earth for that long. You can fill in the gaps of what you think he's doing. Is he coming back with the army? I don't really know. But it's nice because we did see Mark going through like a montage of saving people. And I think that that was just good to show that he has subtly been getting more and more comfortable with his powers. He's getting a resume of villains he's beaten. Like, he's just growing casually. And this is all done cleanly in like 5 minutes of screen time. So that was a good start for the real world.
Yeah, he beats the shit out of a super villain, you know, stops a carjacking. And just like you said, all in a matter of like 5 minutes. So we can clearly see the growth of his character from last season. I know Mark is definitely still going to be getting his ass kicked for a very long time. He's still young. I think they mentioned that he's barely 18 or not even 18. So it makes sense that his character,
since he applied for college, he'd probably be 17 or 18. Yeah.
So it's just awesome seeing that growth a little bit, even though when we do get down to, you know, some tougher villains, he still struggles. But like these side characters, the villains of the week, if you want to shout out Spider-Man across the universe, you know, they're nothing for him now.
But they're even better than villains of the week because like they reuse, it might be in the next episode, they reuse
Seismic.
Yeah, exactly.
He was kind of cool, man. I thought he was pretty strong.
And another thing I really didn't like stick with me until I watched it through the second time is how well they show the effects of the world after like these villains of the week happen. Like if you think back to last season, if you remember the crazy college evil genius dude that was torturing people and making them like cyberhumans. Mm-hmm. Once Cecil and the government got a hold of that technology, they applied it to their own form of defense. And that just, they didn't like make it like a plot point or anything really. It just kind of was a thing. So they used that shit so well that it just goes back to writing. Like, I think this is one of the best written shows that I've seen in a long time. And that's probably where all my compliments are I'm just going to keep harping on it because I love, there's no plot holes yet. Like, and everything kind of makes sense and it's all satisfying and they have enough plot twist that keeps you on your toes. It's just great to see.
Yeah.
But anyway, just to move on to some other things I want to ask your opinion about, because you already kind of hinted at it, but it looks like Mark and Amber are just full on still together at the beginning of the season. Like nothing really happened too much. She's a little bit more accepting. And Mark's whole thing is that he just wants to make up for all the deaths that happened because of Omni-Man. But Cecil doesn't want him back yet. So like that's this piece. And I just want to ask, like, I'm on team. I don't like Amber.
It's funny. I just, you know, you see all the clips on Twitter, like when the trailer came out and Mark, it's the trailer clip of him saying like, you're too good for me. And like all the comments are just like, Mark, you're too good for Amber, like all shitting on Amber.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say I like her quite yet. She's fine, but I can definitely see the reasons for the hate. I mean, she's just a hypocrite. You know, she's like, give me attention. And it's like, oh, go save the world. But like, also give me attention.
Oh, I was pissed when we found out she knew and was still mad at him for going to save the world. Like at the end of season one, that's when I was just done with Amber.
Her character just doesn't really make sense. She's just a hypocrite. So as of right now, I'm not going to say like I hate her, but like I can understand why there's the hate for her.
Also, I'm so pulling for Adam Eve and Mark to get together.
Sure, especially after seeing that Adam Eve episode, I'm sure you're even more into her.
That's going to be the lens I view this whole podcast through. I'm trying to break Amber up and I want Eve in there.
That is probably going to be one of like, I feel like the long-term plot points of this show is Mark's love life, because, you know, he's dabbled with both Adam, Eve, and Amber, it feels like. And in what we've seen in superhero shows, you know, it's hard for a superhero to date a regular person. So it would make sense if Mark and Eve could just like link up and just be superhero couple.
Sign it.
Yeah, but who knows? I just feel like that is one of the long things. Like there is definitely some sexual tension between
those. Oh yeah,
two.
I mean, she was into it until she came back in season one. Like when she broke up with Rex, she went to his house.
Yeah,
and then he was hooking up with Amber for the first time, which I was pissed about. Because also a opinion I have that's pretty strong is I just hate Rex Blood, and I'll put it out. Let me just say also though that Rex, played by Jason Mantzoukas, I love him. So like he's Jay from Big Mouth.
Yeah.
He's in the league, like the fantasy football show. I love this dude. I think he's hilarious. I just think it's so doesn't fit in this show. And I also think his character just kind of sucks.
Yeah. Rex is just the asshole character. It's just something about the voice just doesn't fit at all for me. Like I think he's supposed to be a comedy character, but the voice just doesn't feel like a superhero voice. And it just doesn't really fit for me. And I agree. Like every time he speaks on screen,
It's like a cringy kind of like it takes you out of it a little bit. But
yeah, that's my only complaint probably of the whole show. And that's not even like the worst thing. You know?
Yeah, I don't care that much about it. It's more about because like I didn't want Eve and him together and then I want Mark and Amber together. So whatever. Maybe Amber and Rick Splode should hook up. Okay, a couple more things. This and then we're pretty much done with the first episode of like Mark's storyline until the end is just the Guardians are pretty much struggling out there. They don't have real leadership. Cecil keeps calling them like amateurs, basically because Rudy, who's now old robot, love his voice actor, by the way, Zachary Quinto.
He's doing a great job, too, of kind of still incorporating that monotone robotic voice and not really having emotions. And you can kind of hear his voice developing emotions as a human, which is really
Do you know who plays him? Like, have you seen his?
I haven't seen it.
He's the bad guy from Heroes, is where I originally met him Skylar, I think his name is. Mm-hmm. He's just great. He's in a bunch of things too. But anyway, like I said, star-studded cast there. The more important thing is, so the Immortal gets called in. He is now going to be the leader. Mm-hmm. And I want to ask you a question about that in a second. And then also they add this new guy, Bulletproof, to the team. And then the last piece is just Robot gets to stay on the team, which obviously that had to happen. So my question is, the Immortal's just Wolverine. Like he physically looks like Wolverine. He has the healing like Wolverine and lives forever like Wolverine.
I honestly don't know.
Does he not physically look like him?
I mean, okay. Yes. And the color scheme's there obviously too, but have we actually seen him super heal? I feel like
his head cut off before.
Yeah. But like they did some like, it felt like to me, they did more like sciencey stuff to bring him back to life more so than it was like his ability to just heal.
I just think his name is the Immortal because he can't die. That's because we got that montage of him straight up out of Wolverine Origins. If you remember, of him going living through every war, like from the medieval times, like he like Wolverine did that in the Origins too. Like that's the thing, is he just can't die, which I didn't really know that when I thought Omni-Man ripped his head off the first time. Like I thought he was just dead.
And he was like buried. Back. He was legitimately buried, and they unburied his body and then put him in like this Goku soup stain chamber. And then he was alive. So
he might not have come back. Yeah. I don't know.
That's what I think to me, I guess if you like put his parts back together, they might heal.
Sure.
With maybe some extra science to it. So I think in that sense, he's immortal. I don't really get it either, to be honest. It's a little confusing, but that's how
they really go too much into the details.
Again, we've never, like, we see him like in the beginning, like both of his arms are broken by Omni-Man, but like they don't heal necessarily, you know, like Wolverine's healing. So it's a little bit of a gray area for me on like the immortal. Like I get he's supposed to be immortal. What does that mean? You know,
I do like him as a character because he's literally the only one from the last Guardians that's still alive. Mm-hmm. And so he has this thing against Mark and Omni-Man, which that comes back up later.
My only other comment too is from Immortal's introduction is I will say Rex's quotes here were really funny when he's just like, oh, like, you guys totally planned this intro. You know, you came in at the right time. Like, that was so cool. And then he's like, bulletproof. Like, wonder what your power is. And it was like, okay, that was
he has
funny.
Moments. Yeah, I'm not going to say he's like the worst character,
but he
ever.
Definitely holds back a lot of our main characters.
Yeah. Plus, like, his power isn't that. It's
he's like,
how is it that helpful in this world?
Who's the guy from the Suicide Squad, Polka Dot? Remember, like, he just like throws like explosive.
Better is Mr. Five from One Piece or whatever. The guy who flicks his boogers.
I think it was Mr. Three, actually.
No, three's the worst.
Oh, three is duh.
Anyway, let's talk about, I guess, before we switch over to the twins, the last two things I just had written down were just Debbie, the mom, she, and I don't remember, Red, what was Flash?
Olga.
But what was Flash's name?
Red.
Was it Red Flash?
I was going to say Red Flash, but there's no way.
Well, let me see if it's right here.
God damn it. Don't Red.
It was the
Red Rocket? No, definitely not Red Rocket. Invincible.
It's not Red Rocket.
It's definitely not Red Rocket. Red Rush. That's totally cool.
Alliteration. There you go.
See, this is what we're talking about at the beginning of the pod. We're just here face value, man. We don't remember anything.
So Red Rush's ex, or I guess widow, I don't know if they were married or whatever, and Debbie are grieving together. Mm-hmm. We'll talk about Debbie later. She pretty much is just going through it these episodes.
Yeah, I really don't have much to say besides the fact that she's just going through it. And I obviously understand where her grief and anger is coming from. I mean, she was married for 20 years and they said, you know, Omni-Man literally just called her a pet. Mm-hmm. So that would piss me off. And so that's really it for her story, but get where she's coming from.
And then Mark and Eve catch up for the first time this episode. They just kind of like talk, and then eventually Mark gets the okay to be able to join the Guardians behind the scene for Cecil. Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's switch, because
also gets into college, him and Amber.
I might have missed that. Yes, you're right, they opened up the letters to Jesus. I even had it written down earlier.
Godolkin University. University,
whatever. Okay, so we're going to move over to the twins, the Maulers, who they're not even twins, they're clones, the Maulers. I fucking love these guys. I just want you to put it out there. I did not think they were going to be nearly as important when they were first introduced. I think it's the pilot in episode one. It's just amazing, because not only when you find out like their cloning process, how cool that is and how strong they are, their intelligence makes them relevant still. They're not just a bad guy of the week. Like, they have been used multiple times, like the robot used them in schemes.
You're led to believe that they are.
Exactly. And dude, they turn out to be, they're some of my favorite characters. They're just funny as fuck. They hate each other.
They're the clones.
Yeah, exactly. And when we find out that they literally make it so they don't know which one's the real one, or else like they'll go crazy, basically. Yeah. Like, that's just such a cool little point. But anyway, so the twins, they're going to be the backbone of the Angstrom storyline for episode one. So a lot of that kind of goes down here, right? Like, we see them where we left off with them. They're back in the prison. Some Rick and Morty style portals open up. Angstrom steps through and he actually helps them. Does a little bit of an info dump, says like talking about the universes, what he's really trying to go for, how Mark and Nolan team up in the majority of other universe timelines, which we already hinted at. And then he has an amazing speech. I didn't write too much of it down, but he has an incredible speech about the value of his powers and how he's essentially the Prometheus of the multiverse. Like, he wants to give, all right, this universe has a cure to cancer, I'll give you this. All right, this universe has flying cars, I'll switch it. Like, it's just such a great idea. And then this leads directly into us meeting the Council of Kangs, like all of the other Angstroms that he pulled together that all have the knowledge from the different universes. And he wants the Maulers to combine them, or to combine all their memories into the main Angstrom, because I think we also find out that only the main Angstrom can portal hop. Not every version of him can do it, but he was the one that brought them all together so he can get all their memories and basically cure the universe, save the multiverse.
Yeah, it's better than just individually interviewing each one of himself one by one, getting his knowledge. He'd rather just quickly steamrolled into one plot.
And then like he offers them the deal, like, you help us, we'll put you in any universe you want. And the Maulers want to go to a universe with no superheroes and everyone thinks they're gods, which is just right on.
And good food.
Right, good food. Right on cue with them.
Yeah.
So anything else that you took away from just like the initial meeting of his council before Invincible gets there?
Not really. I honestly, for a second, when he said meet the family, I legitimately thought he was going to say like, we're all Maulers essentially, like this is what our human form looks like, but that obviously doesn't check out. Like, he would have been, you know, super strong, not had the ability for who knows, but
yeah.
I was kind of expecting that, like, the Maulers to be actually clones of Angstrom, which I guess isn't like necessarily like out of the question, but yeah, kind of like what I was saying earlier, we had an understanding of Angstrom's powers. They were talking about like how they broke out because he had the portal. It sounded like exactly where they were, like they were him in his wasteland universe, it's portal from a crater to basically break them out. So I'm not sure. Maybe I took that wrong. I'm not too sure, but just some more clarification on his powers.
So you think it's like where he is where he ends up in that universe?
That's what I thought.
That kind of makes sense.
But that's only what I gathered, is like, because that's why they were saying, like, that's why you had to bring us to this location, is because that's like where we were.
Yeah. That's
like
totally
this crater. We're in the middle of nowhere. We have to walk to these other places, not just portals. So
yeah,
I'm not 100% sure on that, but that's just how I gathered it to be. That's the only real comments I have.
Again, it makes it better rather than him being like Rick from Rick and Morty, just teleporting wherever he wants, whenever he wants. That kind of makes him a little OP.
More controlled.
Yeah. Like I was saying, the whole plan to get the Maulers to build this machine for him, like, he kind of started it, but he needed them to finish it because it's their expertise, and they're going to combine all of these memories into the main one and also allow him to retain knowledge that he is the main one. Mm-hmm. So while the process is kicking off, of course, like, Invincible shows up under Cecil's orders. And then this is where like a cool moment happens where he summons all of the other different versions of the Maulers. Like, every single other episode, Mark gets the fucking shit beat out of him. He always is getting the living shit kicked out of him.
The two swollen eyes that are just like black and blue, just missing teeth, the classic look of how he was at the end of season one.
It's just insane. Like, he constantly is taking L's, but because he's a Viltrumite, he's good.
Our one buddy who like loves Invincible, Die Hard, reads the comics and everything, legitimately says like for 500 chapters it's just Invincible just getting the shit kicked out of him. Sure. And it's fine. I mean, it's totally fine, because I mean, each villain that we get introduced to, they are genuinely really strong. And again, Mark is just so young and inexperienced that he just gets his ass kicked. And
yeah, so like the whole fight goes down, and eventually they're gonna kill Invincible. Again, it's cool that they don't always just make the good guys win like that. Like, he was gonna die. And then Angstrom takes off the helmet, messes up the whole process, causes a huge explosion, and like deforms himself into this super villain where he has like this huge brain and all that's going on. So this is just the kickoff of our main villain of season two. But I think you're supposed to assume for 5 minutes that the OG Maulers died, Angstrom died, pretty much everybody there except for Invincible died, right?
Yeah.
Because of the explosion. And then you do see at the very end that did both the OG twins live, or just the one?
Just the one who was
probably going to go clone himself again. Either way,
doesn't really matter. Yeah, as long as there's one of them, he's going to live.
Yeah, and then that leads to Angstrom giving the whole supervillain speech, saying like, "I hate Invincible." Like, all he can think about is all of the other Omni-Man and Nolan's, like, come like across all the other timelines, how he's way more bad than good. And because of the explosion, it kind of just internalizes into a vendetta against our boy Mark.
This has been one of the big themes of this season to me that I've been noticing, is pointing of the finger. Whose fault is it? You know, the whole thing about Omni-Man destroying the killing all those innocent people like kind of put that on Mark a little bit. And Mark's like, you know, I'm not my father. And like, there's just all this finger pointing. And it's like, and Mark too, even in these moments in episode two, when he's saving people, everyone's like, look, you did what you needed to do. It's not your fault. And here Angstrom is giving the speech. He's like, he did this to me. Like, this is all Invincible's fault. I look like this because Invincible did. And it's like, well, it was your plan. Mm-hmm. You got the help of two villains to help you out who they're on the radar of all the superheroes. So like, yes, Mark, I guess, directly was the cause of this, but like, you wouldn't have been put in this situation if you just didn't do all this.
Yeah,
you know?
They just needed a reason for him to hate. Yeah. Okay, we'll move into the next episode, but the last two things that happen are just the Immortal confronted Mark and is very suspicious naturally. I don't think there's really a conversation there. And then the last thing is Mark and Debbie talk for a second, kind of like grieve together a little bit. And then there you go. Upstate University is where the letters, both get accepted. Amber and Mark do. So that's just episode one. It was a great way to kick off the season, kind of get you comfortable with all of our characters, where this season's headed, because I didn't know if Omni-Man was just going to show back up in episode one. And like, I didn't know how a story could build if he just comes back right away with the Viltrumites. That seems like either an end of the season thing or at least the second half of the season.
Right.
I'm fine with focusing on Angstrom for now.
Definitely.
Yeah. All right, man. Let's move on to episode two. This is in about 6 hours. I lost my virginity to a fish is the name of this episode. The only thing that makes this one weird covering is the Martian that we get introduced to, who kind of has scenes throughout. I'll just cover two of his intro scenes here, and then he comes back into play, obviously, later. But just to pick up like with this guy, he was from episode or season one. Like, he was one of the people that Mark encountered when he went to Mars with all the astronauts. How this goes, which is interesting, I didn't see this coming, is like the astronauts that went to Mars want to exterminate the Martian species, and then you find out he's shape-shifting and he's basically just Martian Manhunter, like literally. Yes. From the DC, even though the Guardians Martian Manhunter died, but he sees the Guardians version of the Martian Man and basically on TV and gets super inspired by it, so that like becomes this whole thing.
Yeah, honestly, it took me I probably should have taken your word for it and watched season one again, because I'm definitely confused on where we had last left Martian. I had to look it up, but definitely took me a second to process, like, okay, this is not the one we know. It's just they all kind of look alike.
Yeah.
And this guy actually, while most Martians seem to be evil, this one has some good intentions, it feels like.
They just never waste those one-off feeling episodes. Like, the Martian episode felt like a one-off side quest.
But
comes back to be this important. Like, it just, it's so genius.
Yep. That's what makes the show so great.
Yeah. So he doesn't come back until the end in the form of Shapesmith, right?
Shapesmith.
So that's really all we get in the beginning. He seems like a good dude. I'm rooting for this Martian. He wants to help. Yeah. He wants to basically be accepted by Earth, just like the last Martian. Mm-hmm. So that we'll pick up with him when we get there. But let's just flow through some of this episode. A lot of it is just Mark centered. I'll kind of just go through and we'll talk about whatever. But this is like a Amazing Spider-Man 2 moment here, where like graduation's going on and where's Mark at? Amber's actually being understanding for once. So I did give her a little brownie point
the
for
one
this
time.
Where she's like, I'll be here.
Yeah.
But I'll let you talk about whatever you want, because the whole thing that's distracting him right now is he got called to Washington, D.C. to fight Dr. Seismic, who's trying to get revenge on the world for basically taking resources from the world. So meaning he hates everything that's not made of wood, because he's like, you can keep wood.
Yeah, that was so random. I mean, it was a great scene. Again, just Mark struggling a little bit, like Doc Seismic. I love that name, to be honest, too. Just again, these villains, I'm gonna stop calling them villains of the week after this, but
they're not.
Because they're not. Yeah. But like these villains of the week that you just think have no meaning in episode like season one. And they kept highlighting him too in, you know, last season or last episode on Invincible. So like, I might be setting my expectations a little too high, but I, again, don't think this will be the last we see of Doc Seismic at all. And he proves to be pretty formidable. I love his like cuffs or whatever they are that just like cause like seismic explosions, like whenever they clash or whatever it is. It's really cool. And I thought, you know, him calling the Washington Monument like phallic was really funny. Just like, you got a giant penis here.
And he had the coolest like backstory of what happened in between him getting thrown into. He's like, like I was down there and I got new friends, like just the molten people. And that's one of the other cool thing about the Invincible world is anything like fantasy or superhero, any of the stereotypes exist in this world. Like, we got we're talking aliens, we're talking molten monsters, like whatever you want.
Yeah,
like there's what's the thing from Pacific Rim called, the kaijus or
kaijus,
like
monsters.
They exist.
Yeah.
Like, it's just all these things, they can just use whatever they want whenever it's convenient.
To be honest, when we got into, I'm jumping the gun a little bit here, but when we got into the Darkwing's village or the town,
Night City,
we see like a skeleton hanging from one of the buildings. I legitimately was like, zombies, like there could easily just be zombies for whatever reason.
Been.
Because it looked like it was a zombie, but we'll see about that. But
and then this is a stupid thing that I love, but after like Mark deals with Seismic, they all graduate, whatever, then what happens is that they go to Eve's house in the woods and they're just like hanging out. Like, I would do anything, just that house is so cool. They're just casually drinking, the four of them that know. Geez, I should know. Amber, it's Amber, Eve, Mark, and
I think it's Todd. I can't 100% confirm that, but I just love, like, he's just us. He's just like, I love having superhero friends.
He's just so much less trustworthy, though. Like, he's like willing to just like, he almost spoils it like four times, the secret, but luckily, Eve knew, Amber knew, like all that stuff. He's an idiot, but yeah, like, he's just a good,
he's the guy,
humanizing
he's,
character.
He's gonna be the guy in the chair, hopefully.
Basically. Yeah. But her house is awesome.
Oh, the fact that she's just like touching flowers and they just become beer, and then gives Mark a virgin daiquiri or whatever the hell it was. Like,
yeah,
she legitimately has. I mean, I always say teleporting is like the go to ability for me personally, but this has got to be
just like reality manipulation. She can do whatever she wants.
This is, yeah, stronger than any reality manipulation, just because it's so easy for her to do it. Mm-hmm. Like, she just touches or looks at something and it's just there.
So let's just jump and do Eve's like isolated scenes here where. Mm-hmm. She's trying to save the world without it being like a combat thing. Like, she's trying to just do good for the world. So she goes to Chicago to help out with, like, I think they said like the fires, whatever. She has this good moment where she saves his parents and these a mom and a daughter and fixes the apartment and then like tries to do more and like makes that whole community center. Right. It's all good. Then she goes home and her parents suck. And you got to watch the Adam Eve special because like you'll hate them even more.
Really? Because at first
they're the worst.
Because like in the first 10 minutes, they're like, everything's good. You know, they're loving their daughter. They're raising her. So I didn't. And obviously I've only seen the 10 minutes. So it's not like I know where it goes. But
she hasn't been living with them basically. Mm-hmm. Since she left, like she's just basically like cut them off.
Like her father specifically. To no end pisses me the fuck off.
Dude, she gives him a pure gold apple and he says no. Like, dude, grow up.
I'm the man of the house. I have to provide. It's like, shut the fuck up, man. Like, if you are handed that, just take it. And he's like, it's all fake. You don't even know your daughter at all. I hate this man so much.
I'm just done with them if I'm her. I'll never see you again.
Between the boys and this, if you're a soup and you're the daughter and son of non-soups, your life just sucks. Your parents just basically hate you.
Yeah, I mean, because the dad shows her the newspaper from Chicago and she didn't realize, like, she basically caused
a sinkhole.
A sinkhole because it wasn't, like, good foundation, whatever. Mm-hmm. It's just adding more nuance to, like, Eve can't just see everything through rose-tinted glasses. Like, she needs to be realistic about things.
And the fact that the father gets the last word, too, as she's leaving. He's like, don't come back until you get control of your power. It's like, just reality it so that he just doesn't have a mouth.
I don't understand why she even goes back at all. But anyway.
I don't either. The mother, it's got to be it.
Debbie and Mark have another scene, and all I just write is just like they're both just struggling. Like, they don't know how to deal with Nolan being gone and how he fucked their whole lives up. Do you have anything else?
Because I like both of these characters. Obviously, you know, Debbie, just a nice woman, just the victim of a horrible incident, as well as Mark. And like Mark's angsty teenage self is coming out here because, you know, the mom is trying to help both of them out. But I think Cecil says it best, like, you got to help yourself out before you can help Mark. And I think that issue is causing a little bit more tension. It's just painful to watch them.
Like, where's her storyline go, though?
I don't really know. Like, I think Olga's going to have a big part in this, like, with her. Like, I think, like, just these victims, the wives of these victims, I think they're going to have some kind of purpose. I really don't know.
It's kind of like the Soups Anonymous thing in The Boys, like, all the people that are affected by being near Soups.
I just don't know what the foundation is for Debbie's plot line, because she is now at the point where she doesn't want Mark kind of working for Cecil anymore, because she thinks Cecil is going to have him on a leash, treat Mark as if he will become Omni-Man. Mm-hmm. And so that pisses her off. I really honestly don't know. It just sucks because when Mark is most angry, it feels like now it is around his mother, and it just sucks because, you know, she's been through it too, Mark. So you gotta be there for one another. And
also, I'll just say it, which I don't even feel good about saying, is like, obviously Debbie's storyline is just the least fun.
Yeah, because it's just so depressing. It's depressing, but
yeah, it's just like, I need something cool to happen with her, like make her relevant. I want her to like work with Cecil, like go all in and be a part of
headed a little bit.
It could be give her purpose, like help support like Mark in case Omni-Man comes back. I feel like that would be a fun way to,
like,
use Debbie.
She's so in deep into the whole reality of the truth. You know, the whole world doesn't really,
they don't have the inside view.
Yeah. And I just feel like it's just a waste to have her kind of just sitting in the sidelines for now.
Sandra Oh, like one of the bigger actors on this show. Like, she's, I think she's literally listed even above J.K. Simmons on the call sheet, really? Which is crazy. Yeah, I mean, according to IMDb, it is, which is wild because J.K. is the man, but mm-hmm. Okay, and then just last scene before we get to Midnight City. Sorry, I said Night City earlier. Mm-hmm. It's Midnight City, which is even cooler. Mm-hmm. Before we get there, because I'm just going to gush about that just like conceptually. That last scene I thought was hilarious is Duplicate getting banged out by the immortal, and she's like mid conversation with Rex, and she's just like,
That is such a plus to be dating someone that can just duplicate themselves. Oh my god, if you want to have a three-way, four-way, five-way, duplicate can make it happen, man. I did not know where that was going. Mm-hmm. And immortal walks out with just both two Kates on his arms. I'm just like, oh my god,
I'm team immortal over Rex in this situation. Oh, for sure.
I mean, immortal's also kind of a dick, but like Rex is just an asshole, so I'm definitely team immortal and Kate. Like, they can just do their thing. Sure.
All right, let's go. Since I've seen this, I've been wanting to talk to it. I literally had to spoil it for you because I was so just mind blown how cool it is. Because if you think back to season one, one of the Guardians that pulled from DC was clearly Darkwing. Okay, so Darkwing is the spoof of Batman. Mm-hmm. Like, obviously, he's the one without the powers. He has all the gadgets and stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's just so cool that Cecil sends Mark to Darkwing's city, and it's called Midnight City because it's obviously been undefended since the Guardian's been gone. Mm-hmm. And when he flies over to it and you see it from far away, it's just like this bubble of night in the middle of the day, and it's literally called Midnight City for that reason. It's just so cool. The reason like behind it, they casually just say like a magician or something like made it dark one time and now it's perpetually at night. It's just Gotham, and it's so fucking cool. Yeah. It's not just pure dark. It has like that red tint to it too. And essentially when Mark gets there, Night Boy shows up, who is Robin. Like Nightwing is literally that. It's just so cool. He has like this whole exoskeleton suit and he can phase into the Shadowverse. Like, this whole thing front to back was like one of my favorite like isolated scenes of the show. Just how cool that was. Like, he pushes Mark into the Shadowverse. He basically gets out of it because he's gonna threaten, like, there's things that live in the Shadowverse. It's just such a fucking dope scene, and doesn't really amount to much, but it's just showing that Mark has now gained Cecil's trust to actually get shit done. And it was just fucking awesome.
Yeah, I think Night Boy was honestly as much of a loser he kind of was, like just like freaking out, like calling Mark Omni-Man, which, you know, totally uncalled for. But just like picture Batman with just like a little bit of superpowers to him. And it's so cool. Like, that Shadowverse thing was unbelievable.
What was the last thing that happened? Did he get knocked out?
He just got chopped, and Cecil's like, all right, bring him over and we'll, you know,
dude, I really hope he comes back.
Oh, I think that and the Shadowverse are both coming
back. How about Midnight City too?
Oh, all of it. Yeah, all of it's coming back, man.
Such a good spot for things to happen.
This is not the end of Night.
Like Omni-Man and Mark in season four can just be fighting and throwing each other through buildings, and they end up in Midnight City for a second. Like, that's just such a cool little world building thing.
And especially if like Night Boy has the advantage in this city, it just could play into so many abilities of just him helping.
He should be
out.
A guardian.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's just a little, it seems he's a little wet behind the ears. Like, he seems also very young as well. Like, if I had to guess, he was probably Mark's age.
Yeah. I mean, that makes sense with it being Robin too. Like, cool. All right. We're making good progress here. I want to say that we definitely should just at least talk about, I don't have any opinions on this. Is it as simple as this next scene being Debbie showing up to talk to Cecil and seeing Donald alive? Is it as simple as he just grabbed one from a different multiverse? Or is this guy not a human and it's like a grown thing?
Dude, I mean, because of what we've been introduced to in season one and season two, like, there's no way for us to know. Like, we've already been introduced to cloning. We've already been introduced to multiverse. Like, it could legitimately
lab grown. It could be it could be anything.
My theory is I guess I think it's a clone for right now. He doesn't have the memories, it seems, of him dying. It seems like he has memories of being Donald, and he knows who Debbie is. It's just he doesn't remember the death, and he was a little weirded out by Debbie's reaction of seeing him alive.
Sure.
So
I'm into the idea of it, of the multiverse being a red herring. Like, it's such a coincidence that they're showing it at this time. It's like most people are probably jumping to he's a Donald from a different universe. And I don't want it to be that.
It's going
to
be something complicated. Like, I don't think they would have just left it as this open. Cecil could have easily just been like, oh yeah, like, we cloned him.
Yeah.
You know, he could have easily just told her there's no reason to hide that information. I think.
What Cecil's if they have almost, like, an army of him?
He's been a little sketchy, Cecil, to me, I think. I agree. Not that I think Cecil's necessarily bad. I just think Omni-Man fucked him up also mentally to the point where now he is also just like so untrusting of people. And
sure,
even though Debbie had those comments, like, he gave her a weird side eye. So I don't know where he's going either.
Like, Cecil feels like he's just always constantly thinking of ways to protect Earth, which he has to. But you're right. If he gets sketchy, it could be weird. Like, what if he has an army of Donalds just ready to go, and they all could be using the tech from this is how he could be defending the world. I don't know. There's so many things, and I'm more interested in this than I thought I would be. Mm-hmm. Like, the whole Donald thing. But we're definitely going to get answers.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And again, I'm just emphasizing the fact that I think it's just going to be more complicated than something as simple as just pulling him from another multiverse.
So the last big thing that happens here, everything to do with Atlantis, right? Mm-hmm. In order to get there, we have that quick scene with Amber and Mark going to Vegas because he can't go to Europe because the Ripper skin off. That's cool writing. Like yeah. They couldn't just transport her to Europe, whatever. He gets called in by Cecil to repay the debt or like the crimes of Omni-Man to the Atlanteans for having killed their king. Mm-hmm. All that to say, like, he basically killed their Aquaman. And now he has to, quote unquote, marry the queen to kind of replace it. But we find out within 4 seconds that tradition got replaced with trial by combat, and they have the Kraken as their representation of their fighting. And like this whole battle goes down. It's pretty cool. Cecil gets involved, like missiles come in, Invincible's getting his ass beat again, like he always is. Once Cecil helps though, like instead of leaving, he decides to go back and help out. So there's a lot to really talk about here, but last comment I'll say is like, because it's animated, it's so easy to make cool settings. Like we just went from Midnight City. Now we're going to Atlantis. Mm-hmm. Like they just look so cool and they can do whatever they want. So
it's just such a great world to be a part of.
Yeah.
My only thing is, again, just Cecil.
Shady,
man. Like he's been all these instances, like Invincible shows up and he has these feelings of regret because, you know, he maybe didn't save some people or innocent, like just basically more innocents are going to die. And this was in Atlantis and in whatever it was, that other place, that basically Cecil's always telling him, like, there's going to be death. Just don't worry about it. Just go home. Listen to me. And I'm not liking that. I feel like Cecil has never really kind of been like that before up until now. And again, I think this all has to do with the fallout of Omni-Man. But yeah, Cecil is legitimately the reason why these Atlanteans are getting killed right now, because he sets the bombs. It mm-hmm. sets the Kraken free. And now the Kraken is going around just killing all these Atlanteans. And again, this is the finger pointing. Like Cecil's like, yeah, it's not your fault, Mark. You know, they were going to kill you. They were all cheering for your death. And Mark's like, fuck that. Like, I get it. They just want justice, though. And so just Cecil being crazy. But the fight was really awesome. I was hoping to get a little bit more of like aquatic physics kind of here, like maybe something slows down Mark a little bit, because they were kind of just
going
eating each other like with ease through the water, which again might just be a testament to their strength. But I thought the design of this Kraken was just like really cool. It was definitely a badass.
Do you like the Lord of the Rings moment they had when they push the Kraken in the hole?
Oh, yeah.
Everything's all good. And then he gets Gandalf and like the whip comes out and pulls him in. I was like, that's fucking sick.
The only other thing I was thinking of was the SpongeBob SquarePants movie when, I don't know if you remember this, when they're getting like, they're driving on this road. It's just full of skull and bones. And they see like this ice cream shop of the grandma. And she's
it's like a big ass.
Yeah, it's a big ass fish. I'm just
that
like,
is what it was.
It was exactly that.
It was Mark so obvious the Kraken wasn't going to be that little thing.
I mean, there's just, Mark's an idiot. That's again, wet behind the ears.
Watch a fucking movie, Mark.
Yeah, really.
And then something I saw that I am now paying attention to things like this more closely is like, it's just like a kind of like a throwaway line, but Cecil wants his team to decode what the Kraken was screaming. I don't know if you caught that.
Yes, that was interesting, because even when the Kraken triggers the sound, and even Mark immediately is like,
what is,
like, that's like, he makes a comment. He's like, this sound, as if he remembers it or it like was familiar to him.
Yeah.
And then at the very end, again, Cecil's like, we're going to try and decode this. And
which opens the door for like whatever it is, like it's going to come back as something relevant for Cecil, because Cecil's always gaining something from every single one of these.
First time watcher, just it really meant nothing. I mean, like, we're supposed to understand that the Kraken made a noise and it's gotten the attention of everyone. But I don't know.
Even imagine what it could be. But
I was thinking like maybe they'd use it to like summon other Krakens, but then that Kraken would have had other Krakens there. You know, like it was speaking. Maybe it was legitimately just like saying something like these Atlanteans. Maybe it was saying like these Atlanteans
are evil.
And like, I'm the one being chained, slaved here, you know? True.
Yeah, that's interesting. I wrote that down. I don't have any guesses, but that's going to come back. But then also, like, while this conversation's happened, Donald says, like, starts asking questions like, why is Debbie like confused? I'm here. So that's going to be more for later. Mm-hmm. Okay. So now we're almost there. A couple of cool things happen here, which I've been hoping to see is finally the appearance of the Lizard League. They've been talked about like seven times.
Yeah.
And Cecil, basically everybody that's ever talked about them has been shitting on them, like saying like they're just they're literally they're worse than the villain of the week. They're just like the weakest thing. Like they don't even usually send the guard.
They always are. They're trending on social media because they're just so lame.
And Cecil says like we're gonna send the Guardians. It should be fine because King Lizard's been in a prison cell, like the head of the Lizard League. He's been caught. This whole confrontation happens, and the Shapesmith is there, who is the Martian that we were talking about earlier. He gets involved finally in this scene. Like he comes back, like he's trying to make his Martian Man moment happen now. And then, yeah, a couple other things. Like Debbie's just, again, she has a couple of scenes. She's just losing her shit, like the wine and the cabinet. Like, I don't even want to talk about like that stuff. It's just like she just she's losing her shit. So it's going to culminate in something, and it's got to be sooner because it's starting to get like, where are we going with this?
Yeah, I feel like it's at the peak of her anger. But my only comment, I guess, is the alternate dimension Lizard League, I guess, is why we got that clip of the guard. I was about to say Guardians of Gdolkin. What are they called?
The Guardians,
like the mortal Aquarius war woman. Remember that scene?
They're not called the Guardians of Globe.
Guardians of the Globe, that's what it is. Yeah. I just kept thinking Guardians of Gdolkin, but why show us the Guardians of the Globe fighting the Lizard League in a different timeline? Like I know you're talking, the one that you're referring to is the one that we saw where you know, we just kind of wiped the floor clean with the Lizard League, but we do get that other scene.
Wait, are you talking about when the Supreme Lizard rallies the troops at the end, or is that that's ours?
That's ours. And the one I'm talking about is like the Guardians of the Globe are legitimately fighting the Lizard League. Like there's the Lizard Prince. Omni-Man shows up and he's like, oh, you got like a new suit. And he's like,
Oh,
I just got it tailored. Apparently the big thing is like everyone wears their letter on their stomach. And Immortal's like, oh, is that what that is? This big eye on my stomach?
Was that not a flashback to how the lizard?
I at first I thought it was a flashback, but then again we're on this whole multiverse thing, and it's just like, what if that was like a multiverse that I think is like a little bit like, behind?
I think he was saying like Omni-Man was wearing the all white Viltrumite suit until that moment.
But why did they show us that scene?
I think it was also partly showing that the leaders of the Lizard League are just like in shambles without King Lizard. I don't know. Now that you're saying that, you're making me question all this.
I might have been overthinking because again, at first value, I thought it was a flashback, but then I kind of was on the thought of just like, is this just an alternate timeline? Because they were calling their leader Lizard Prince and Lizard Queen. Like it was Lizard Queen for them, Lizard Prince. And then in our universe, it was Lizard King.
Well, King Lizard shows back
King
up.
King Lizard.
King Lizard shows up at the end to supplant Supreme Lizard, who wasn't being able to rally the Lizard League.
The only thing I had was just that there's that kid lizard in that one.
Yeah.
And then the queen, it's Queen Lizard. So it's not King Lizard, it's Queen Lizard. So that's the only reason why I'm kind of thinking like it's not our timeline. Like
damn,
maybe it's
now a, I don't I'm not
Oh, I'm totally unsure. I might be overthinking this, but if it was a flashback, I apologize for wasting so much time, but I guess my only take from that was that maybe they show us this timeline of like our world, but just like it's a little bit farther behind, or maybe in this one like Omni-Man is actually good, who knows. But
and then my takeaway, which is different and either could be right, we'll get back to you on our next recording, is that the purpose was to show how irrelevant Lizard League is, and then King Lizard shows back up. Okay. So, like, I think they're now going to be a force next episode.
I was also, like, half watching while working, so there might have been, like, the intro to that scene that kind of just, like, that went over my head, maybe. Yeah.
Okay, so that's that. The two more scenes we have to get through before we get to the epilogue scene is just the bringing back Shapesmith, aka the Martian, back to the Guardian's hideout, and we kind of get his... We see the flash of his origin story, kind of connecting back to season one. Like he was part of that whole Martian thing. Seems to be like he's going to be a big part of the story going forward. So I don't think there's anything really to add to there. Cool. So the last scene, which I was wondering where Angstrom was this whole episode. This is a phenomenal scene. This is where Angstrom actually goes to a different timeline where Mark was captured. And he starts asking him questions before like the guards can come in. And the whole purpose of this scene is we finally get an answer to a potential weakness to the Viltrumites. He finds out that in that timeline where Mark is captured, the people killed Omni-Man through the use of experimental quantum bombs. And I think the whole purpose of that scene was just so now he has that knowledge that he can now kill Mark in the main timeline. And fuck yeah, like let's add some tension to the Viltrumites because they're just too invincible. And I like that there's something here that at least the supervillain is going to have access to that could potentially kill our guy.
Do you think at the beginning of episode one, when it's the alternate timeline of Omni-Man and Mark, remember how they hand Robot that purple like serum and he loads it into his gun and fires it at Omni-Man. Yeah. And like they're kind of like talking about like, if there's anything in this world that can kill Omni-Man, it's got to be this. So like, it's probably some.
That's
definitely
like
going
to
be
planning for the idea that people they're obviously yeah, so I'm guessing every it was like universe a quantum has weapon. Tried to kill Omni-Man and Mark when they're attacking him. So some of them were successful. So
it's crazy that we got an answer to Omni-Man now, though, but only Angstrom knows it. So I don't know how.
Yeah, it's good that Cecil doesn't know it. I think.
Yeah, I think
for now.
Until Cecil figures out his shit.
But that's fucking it, man. Dude, this show is just, I'm ready to go, man. I think Angstrom's going to have another, next episode will be another big, like, background plot moving Angstrom thing. And then I think we're going to start having a real confrontation by 4 or 5. Also, I'm pretty sure Omni-Man will be back by mid-season 2 is what I would guess, as just a way to, like, reintroduce J.K. Simmons to the story.
Mm-hmm.
But
we, like, everything we talked about, like, there's just so many little things that we have to get through now this season. Like, just to recap everything, we have Angstrom, we have Donald, we have, you know, Invincible, like all these different timelines and everything.
Lizard League, we got the Kraken, if that matters. Like, yeah.
There's just so much that these two episodes provided us. It's crazy. And when I'm thinking back on it, it's like, did we really watch only 2 hours of content? Like, they just jammed it all in there and it didn't feel like anything was left out. Didn't feel like anything was rushed. Everything was just as is and was perfect, honestly.
Yeah, this was a fucking banger start to season 2. I'm pretty sure, I could be wrong. Did I remember seeing like Rotten Tomatoes or IMDb opened it up and like check real quick. Either way, this is going to be the season that makes it even more mainstream than it already is. Like, people love Invincible.
Mm-hmm.
I love Invincible. I'm telling everybody I know to watch it. Like, this is, and I don't know if it has a season 3 greenlight yet, but like, it's just like this, it's just so great. Like, I have no complaints yet. And I'm just ready to watch the next 2. And thankfully, we have the screeners from Amazon. Shout out Amazon. So we will be watching episode 3 and 4 soon.
What is it? Was it episode season 1, 8, or 10? I honestly am kind of blanking.
I want to say it's 8.
I want to say 8, too. So, and I feel like for shows like this, you know, episode 4, the midway point is always something that's just going to hit different. And I personally would love to see Omni-Man make his appearance in episode 4. So,
and yeah, season 2 of Invincible on Rotten Tomatoes, 100% critics, 91% audience, and critics get access to, I guess early, but either way, like, people love this show and for good reasons. And we haven't even had Omni-Man, who's like, to me, the backbone of the show in this season yet.
Like, the only, like, there's one or two complaints that you have about the show, and they're just like stupid things, like Amber stinks
and Rex
and Rex's voice stinks. Like, plot wise, am I saying any complaints? No. Yeah. But that's going to be it for today's coverage, guys, of Amazon Prime's Invincible. If you like what you heard, give Bingetown TV a follow on all of our social media platforms at Bingetown TV, X, Insta, YouTube, the works. Be sure to join our growing Discord. We absolutely love chatting with everybody, and it is an absolute blast getting your guys' feedbacks, opinions, and theories on whatever shows that we're covering. So please keep joining and hounding us with information. We absolutely love it. And lastly, for our entire podcast catalog of episodes and coverages and shows, all that galore, check out BingetownTV.com. And if you haven't heard it enough, once again, we are Bingetown TV. And thanks for listening. We are Invincible.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.